Well, welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who've come to realize that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to join in this discussion, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. Reuters is reporting that Israel is poised to pass one of the most divisive laws in its 66-year history, a bill that would declare it the homeland of the Jewish people only and further alienate its Arab minority. Just think about that introductory statement. Israel was listed as the homeland for the Jewish people in UN 242. The resolution that established Israel as a Jewish state. It is a homeland for the Jewish people. That's why it was established. Why is it divisive to call it what it is? Yahweh said that Israel would be the homeland of the chosen people who are Jewish. Israel is for Israelis, according to God. So why is something considered divisive if it's in harmony with Yahweh's testimony, if it's in harmony with even the UN Declaration? And I would like to ask those who write for Reuters and their editorial staff who think this is divisive, why they would apply a different standard to Israel. Of the 50 Islamic nations that surround Israel, not one of them provides any rights to any Jew. The very small number of Jews, probably less than 1,000, that exist in those 50 Islamic countries have no rights. There's none of those countries that are even considered a democracy. Those that present themselves as such have only one party that matters, and it's the most fundamentalist Islamic party. So I ask you, since not a single one of the Islamic nations around Israel provide any rights to Israelis, why is Israel supposed to provide rights to non-Israelis? I would also tell you this, since Jews are not terrorizing Arabs or Muslims in any Islamic country, but Muslims are terrorizing Jews in Israel, wouldn't Israel be acting appropriately if it treated its Muslim minority as terrorists, as counterproductive? Now, they don't. And they treat the Muslims living in Israel as full citizens. They have every right to education, every right to participate in the economy, every right to vote, every right to elect their own representatives, every right to health care, to all of the benefits of being an Israeli. It's the only place in the Middle East that affords a minority with rights. The only one. I mean, even in the Islamic countries where the Kurds are Muslims, they're not afforded any rights. The only Islamic country that provided the Kurds with even the right to live without being harassed was Syria. And, of course, that doesn't exist anymore. So why would someone say that it's divisive to say that it is the homeland of the Jewish people? That's what God said. What the Torah says. That's what the UN Declaration says. That was its purpose. You know, the Muslims have 50 nations. have no shortage of land, no shortage of countries, no shortage of opportunities to congregate together. But you see, the Muslims, they want what isn't theirs. They want Israel. They don't want it because it's theirs. They want it because it's Jewish, because it belongs to the Israelis. Political infighting over the measure is already threatening to tear apart Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's governing coalition. The legislation, which is seen as comprising or compromising equality by differentiating between Jewish and non-Jewish citizens in enshrining some symbolic rights to the Jewish people, could also have long-term political ramifications for Israeli democracy and jurisprudence. You know, the fact is that if the legislation compromises the rights of non-Jewish citizens, then in fact the non-Jewish citizens have rights. There are no Jewish citizens that have rights in any Islamic country. Israel represents 0.2% of the landmass of the Middle East. Don't you think that the Jewish people who are routinely attacked and terrorized by Muslims have a right to a tiny strip of land, particularly one that God gave to them? Netanyahu, along with other right-wing politicians pushing the law, say it is essential to protecting Israel's identity against those questioning its right to exist. Oh, maybe that's at stake. Maybe that's an issue. Now, do you think that these morons with Reuters would actually follow that course of reasoning? Do you think any one of these morons with Reuters would declare that the Hamas charter, the PLL charter, the Fatah charter all call for the destruction of Israel, of making Israel a holy Muslim enclave? That their stated reason to exist is to cause Jews to no longer exist? And that's not only what their charter says, that's what their behavior has demonstrated, lo, these last 60 years. Since Hamas, Fatah, and the PLO are all calling for the complete destruction of Israel and turning Israel into a Muslim state, why is it inappropriate for Israelis to say, no, it's an Israeli state? Wouldn't the terror that's been imposed by Muslims against Jews be justification for making that declaration? There are those who are challenging Israel's character as the national state of the Jewish people. Netanyahu said on Sunday, yeah, like every Muslim in the world, like every socialist secular humanist in the world. The Palestinians refuse to recognize this, and there is also opposition from within. Yeah, well, Netanyahu, you're right about many things. You are wrong about using the term Palestinians. You ought not use it. You ought to tell the truth, that there is no such thing as a Palestinian. Palestinians say accepting Netanyahu's call would deny Palestinian refugees of past wars any right of return. There are no Palestinian refugees. First of all, there's no Palestinians. And second, there are no refugees of war. The Muslims that left Israel in 1948, left because they were ordered to leave by fellow Muslims who wanted an easier path, a less congested path, to destroy the returning Jews. They asked the Muslims to leave so they could more readily and easily sweep into Israel with a united Islamic front and push the Jews into the sea. Now, under that basis, they have no rights, and they are not refugees. not by any sane analysis. The distinction on the nation-state bill puts obstacles in the way of peace. No, there is no peace with Muslims. This is the comment of Mahmoud Abbas, who is the terrorist head of Fatah and the PLO. The obstacle to peace is Islam. So long as Islam exists, there will be no peace. That is the obstacle to peace. It has always been the obstacle to peace. So long as Islam exists, Muslims will hunt Jews as prey. Their religious founder, Muhammad, hunted Jews until there were no more. He murdered them. He robbed them. He exiled them. He tortured them. He raped them. He enslaved them. And so you have a religion whose lone example was ruthless relative to Jews. And so long as the legacy of Muhammad continues, Islam continues, there will be no peace. Never. Under any circumstances. You could give the Muslims Israel, and there would be no peace. You could give the Muslims every Jew on earth to kill, and they could do so, and there still would be no peace. You could give the Muslims the entire world. You could rid the world of non-Muslims, and there still would be no peace. So long as Islam exists, its rage, its hatred, this death cult will continue to kill. There will never be peace so long as Islam exists, no matter how much is sacrificed to this deadly, destructive, deceitful, and demonic religion. We'll be back after the commercial break. Two female suicide bombers have blown themselves up in a crowded market in northern Nigeria, killing at least 30 people. Think about that. This is the religion that the Jews are trying to keep from destroying their country, Islam. In Islam, women have no rights. They're raped. They're treated as property. They're sexually mutilated by their perverted parents. And yet, two female suicide bombers, so poisoned by this religion. And it's amazing to see how effective Islam is at perverting women's perspective. You know, the religion that treats them like garbage, and yet they'll kill for it. Here's two women who, you know, women are supposed to be more nurturing than men, more caring and compassionate than men. And yet these two women, Muslims, walked into a crowded market filled with women and children and detonated themselves. Now, the fact that they killed themselves, great. Two less Muslims. But they took 30 people with them. Who knows how many others whose lives they ravaged and devastated, either by the loss of their loved one or their mutilated bodies. The girls, of course, were dressed in the degrading Islamic hijab, full hijab. They entered the market and detonated their explosives. If I could make such a decision, I would make all religious garb illegal. All of it. I don't care if you're wearing the little black hat in Israel, in your black suit. I don't care if you're wearing your black hat and black suit as in your Amish. I don't care if you're wearing your little white beanie and an ankle low dress and you're a Mennonite. It doesn't matter if it's the full hijab and you're relegated to living in a tent. I think all religious garb should be made illegal. And by allowing religious garb in Nigeria, these two women, subhuman versions of women, were able to hide their explosive vests and kill 30 people. Hello, Glenn. What do you think about Islam? Glenn, it says that you're locked in here, but I can't hear you respond when.
I'm here. I'm talking.
Hi, Glenn.
That wasn't on my end.
Yeah, uh-huh. Quite a scene there in Nigeria. Girls
and well, before we move on from garb, the question in my mind is my French maid outfit okay?
So long as you have a cute girlfriend who's wearing it.
No,
yes.
No, that wouldn't be
ideal. Okay. Yeah. It gets the old idea of role play to keep a romance exciting.
Yeah.
Probably a fine and harmless way to keep a relationship fresh and exciting.
Well, I just like to do it because I'm 53, 5'11", gray-haired with a crew cut, reading glasses, and I weigh 250 pounds. So when I say that, most of the time what I get is thanks for the visual.
I was 230 pounds about 3 months ago, but I'm down to 185 now.
I've been meaning to ask, how did your wife like her birthday present?
Yeah, it was an anniversary present, very much.
Oh,
it was. I lost over 40 pounds in that period of time and did so by doing an hour to an hour and a half of exercise a day, and restricted my caloric intake to about 1,000 calories a day. And as a result, lost a half a pound a day.
It's kind of funny how that works, You put less in. We're always into like putting things into our bodies, it's like, that whole calorie counting thing, it's actually very simple. You just have to do it. And that's the hard part.
Yeah, and it's a little more than just counting calories. Limiting the calories to below 1,000. Every 500 below per day, below the sustenance level, and for me to maintain weight for my age and height, was 2,200 calories a day. And so every 500 per day below that is a pound a week. And so 1,000 below that would be 2 pounds a week. And then I was doing over 1,000 calories worth of exercise burn. So, increases it to 4 pounds a week. So basically a half a pound a day. We'll be back with Glenn and Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Glenn. My guest, Glenn, is that you called in not on the success of my diet, but instead on whether or not Israel is appropriate in proposing legislation that just affirm that it is a state for the Jewish people, or that female suicide bombers killing 30 people in Nigeria is a continued affirmation that there's a problem with Islam.
Well, yeah, both of them. The Israel thing, my question would be about that is, what are the implications? I mean, in saying that it's a home for the Jewish people, England's a supposedly Christian nation, Germany's a supposedly Christian nation, are other non-Jews going to be allowed to live there? Still is a fairly significant population of thousands of Jews in Iran, for example. So Iran.
Yeah, I don't know if there's thousands, but there's hundreds, and it's hundreds anyway. And there were hundreds of thousands, and they were expelled from all their property was confiscated, their wealth was confiscated, and they were expelled in 1948. So there's only a few hundred that remain of the hundreds of thousands that were there before they were expelled in 1948. There is no analog, there's no comparison between Israel and the Muslim nations that surround Israel in terms of capacity for non-Israelis to have rights. Now, the statement is strictly for their Supreme Court when interpreting laws, but it does not deprive non-Jews of citizen status, of voting status, of availability of jobs, of health care, and the like. So it is it's strictly to
people use of the road.
It is really being proposed in direct opposition to Hamas and Fatah declaring that Israel must cease to be Israel and must become Palestine, and that it is the homeland for the Muslims. I mean, that is their goal. That's their stated objective. That is what their behavior manifests. And so this is Israel's response to that. So, no, you're wrong.
Right. That, in and of itself, it doesn't seem like it should be all that controversial.
No.
It shouldn't be such a point of contention, you know.
But we apply a different standard to Israel than we apply to the Islamic countries that surround Israel. And this article didn't bother to bring out that hypocrisy on behalf of the Islamic countries. And it just really toasts me to read an article from a major news source that doesn't bring out the facts, doesn't say there isn't any one of the 50 Islamic nations around Israel that provides Israelis with any rights, and Hamas and the PLO have both declared that Israel has no right to exist.
Right. Well, I mean, there are so many Muslim nations, I mean, or you look even at the forming of Pakistan out of India to accommodate the fact that the Muslims, because of the tension between them and the Hindus.
Right. In fact, the definition of Pakistan is land of the pure. The entire purpose of Pakistan was only to allow Muslims. It was land of the pure. Right. I mean, purified of anything other than Islam.
Right. And then just in getting the people across the line once they drew it, I mean, many people died. But they essentially have no problem with India being Hindu and Pakistan being Muslim. So why can't Israel be Jewish?
Why can't, France be French and Germany be German? I mean,
because we're talking about state and religion, religion and state. I mean,
yeah, they're not. They're viewing it from a religious point of view, even though they're presenting it from a racist point of view. In the article, for example, the only mention was Arab. There was no mention of Islam, and yet it was strictly Israeli Arabs, no Islam. There would be no need for this resolution because they would be viewed as full stakeholders in the country. But because of Islam, they're antagonists, they're adversaries. So
No logic, no peace.
Yeah, I saw all of the protest boards in various places around the country. No justice, no peace. There was justice. But even it doesn't matter whether or not there was justice done. Rioters, their whole mindset is no peace, how they justify being so antagonistic when their claim is that they are the moral bastions, that they're right morally, and yet they have no problem with no peace, with rioting, with arson, with looting.
I watched Carol Costello, CNN, interview a black woman, an entrepreneur whose small business had been looted and torched this morning. And she's asking her, who do you hold responsible for this? And this woman's sitting there going, I kind of feel bad for the looters. I'm like, oh, man. It's like, no, we got to find a way to blame this on somebody else other than the looters. I'm like, lady, your business was just looted and torched. And Cal Costello is trying to lead her down the primrose path to blaming somebody else. It's like, I got a great idea. How about if we blame the criminal arsonists and thieves?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we actually hold people accountable for their behavior? The thing I would like to see is Muslims held accountable for acting like Muslims and being suicide bombers.
Yes, I know. Which, first of all, I mean, this phenomenon of decapitation, okay, I mean, we've seen it years ago with the Taliban. Saudi Arabia routinely decapitates people. Now we have ISIS doing it and putting heads on pikes. It's like, let's stop, you know, just indiscriminately killing people who presume to disagree with us and putting their heads on pikes. I think people should be held responsible for that.
You know, and there's a difference between the level of terrorism being perpetrated by Islam and the level of terrorism that was perpetrated, like, by Sherman's March to the Sea or by America's response in tactics in World War II. You know, it's one thing to tell a flight crew to drop incendiary bombs on a town. Now, you know that those bombs are going to burn people alive, but you can't see it. You're distant from it. You can't see their faces. You can't hear their screams. It's another thing entirely to take a knife and slowly slice off someone's head while their blood is pouring all over you, where they're drowning in their own blood, where they're screaming in agony, and you're seeing their face. The level of corruption and degradation of an individual that's required to do what Islam does, and then to parade the heads not only to gather women and children to watch and to participate in the decapitations, but then to take the heads of those who have been decapitated, put them on fence posts while lying their bodies below. It's a separate, special level of degradation.
It's the societally institutionalized psychosis, and nobody has the guts to speak out against it. I mean, government or the media, you know, certainly.
Correct.
Individuals do, we are, but it's like, why can't these cowardly weasels ever muster the courage to say this is wrong?
Right. You know, like the suicide bombers of 9/11, to perpetrate their crime, they took box cutters and they slit the stewardesses' throats first. And then they went up to the cockpit and they sliced the throats of the pilot and co-pilot. So they had to be so murderous, so depraved, that they not only could want to cut the throats of those that they were going to steal the plane from, and to be able to do that and still function in the cockpit while screaming Allahu Akbar. I mean, I can tell you that, you know, first of all, I'm really uncomfortable with killing. But if you were to task me with the mission of slicing someone's throat, hearing them scream and die in agony, and then I was supposed to do a complicated task thereafter. I mean, I'm a pretty strong guy in terms of mental fortitude. Not a way. There's not a chance in the world that I could do that.
Right. Well, yeah, you become inured to it, desensitized. But you have to be a little careful here, because you could be setting yourself up for an argument that says, a person might argue that they take responsibility for the killing they do by doing it, you know, in person, close up and personal, as opposed to someone who doesn't. Sort of analogous to the idea of someone who eats fast food hamburgers vilifying a deer hunter. The deer hunter says, hey, I eat the meat of the deer, but I take responsibility for killing the deer, cleaning it, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and that argument is the argument with the deer is valid to the hamburger eater, and it's why on our farm, I tell those who work here who want to hunt on the farm that if they wish to hunt deer, they can do so under two provisos. One is that their prey suffers as little as absolutely possible. that if they're going to do it, they can't do it because they like to kill. The kill has got to be as merciful and fast and as painless as possible. So you better be good at it.
Into the heart.
Yeah, right into the heart. And second, that you need to eat that which you kill. Now, if you're going to eat what you kill, and you're going to do so in the most merciful way possible, then I'm okay with it. Because from my perspective, that's really no different than me choosing to eat New York steak.
The difference is the deer suffered a lot less than a cow in the slaughterhouse.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Oh. That's probably the case. We are a protein-driven animal. Without protein, our brains don't work. Our muscles stop functioning properly. We require protein. And the primary source of protein is meat. So, I don't have a problem with it. But taking responsibility for killing, almost no one does that. Yesterday I shared that the black flag of ISIS, and it's really not the black flag of the Islamic State, it's the black flag of jihad. It was something that Muhammad came up with. There were three colors of flags that he used when inspiring and leading jihadist terrorist raids. And so it's the black flag of Islam and of Islamic terrorism. It is flying over government buildings in Libya. Police cars carry the Islamic State's insignia. Police cars. The local football stadium is used for public executions under the moniker of the Islamic State. A town in Syria, is this occurring, or in Iraq? Nope, it's along the sea coast in Libya. Boy, did we really fix Libya.
Hoist the colors.
Oh, yeah. You know, in Libya, they had a senile syphilitic that was far more interested in the next girl he was going to bed and how pretty he looks than how ornate he could make his next tent abode. Those were his daily obsessions. And we replaced that with the Islamic State. I mean, have you heard Senator John McClown apologize for his failed strategy? Have you heard the Abominator apologize for his failed strategy? I mean, we bombed Muammar Gaddafi into oblivion. We supplied the weapons for the freedom fighters that turned out to be nothing more than fundamentalist Islamic Mujahideen. And now the very Islamic State that we're at war with in Syria and Iraq is ruling Libya. I mean, does America ever look in the mirror and say, oops, that was a really stupid use of our military?
No, apparently not.
Apparently not. It would do us some good. You know, you talk about taking responsibility. Why don't we take responsibility? We broke Libya. We broke Iraq. We broke Syria.
And now we are.
And now, now we're being broken as a result. And you continue to break enough countries, and ultimately, it will break the breaker. Hammer that we're wielding.
There have been some allegations by an on-the-ground policeman in Ferguson that there are Muslim elements involved in the Ferguson thing.
I keep on hearing that. I have no evidence of it, but it would make sense. You know, one of the things that is really troubling today, and it's really turned me off, is all of the Muslim names and that you hear in sports, whether it's college or the NFL, and how many African Americans have accepted Islam and have Islamic names. And so with Islam being so prevalent now in the African American community, it explains a lot. You know, it explains why they're becoming more violent, why they're becoming less moral, why they're more prone to arson and to thievery. I mean, all of these things are a direct legacy of embracing Islam. You know, Islam is a religion that appeals to the rapist, to the pedophile, to the thief, to the liar. Because Muhammad was all of those things, and the Quran sanctions all of those things. And so I'm not surprised that in riots that are primarily African-American, with the growth of Islam in the African-American community, that there would be an element of it underlying the problems in Ferguson.
Why bother attacking an enemy if you can get him to destroy himself?
Yeah. Well, the most amazing thing about Islam is that while it is the dumbest religion ever conceived, it is still able to play the West for fools. You know, it demands when in the West that it have every right and that no one can speak out against it, no one can hold it accountable in the West, while it undermines and destroys and corrodes. And yet in the Islamic states, they provide none of those freedoms or protections.
Well, the issue there isn't merely judgment. It's cowardice. I mean, part of the reason for all the weaselly lying is that these people are gutless.
The politicians, the academicians, in the Justice Department, they're all gutless weasels. They're all so protective of their next promotion, of their jobs, that they wouldn't dare tell the truth. Because if they told the truth, they would be held accountable. And so for their own personal good, they lie. And it is disastrous for the rest of us. That's why I don't respect them.